look at you.
Awkwardly silent, just looking at the...
Well, usually this is where we're like, what did you do today?
Yeah.
I was right here.
Between these four walls. Anyway, talking of four walls. Welcome to Bread and Barricades, a Lamest podcast. My name is Nemo Martin. I use they, them pronouns. And recently I've been reading a book of all of Hugo's seances. I can't remember if we've talked about any of them before, but when he like moved to Jersey, he was introduced to seances by his friend Delphine de Hira or something. And they spent like years and years doing seances. And like the first one that ever responded to him was Leopoldine. And he was like, nobody in my family would make a practical joke of this, so I am going to choose to believe that my daughter is actually here. And you're a bit like,
I hope that's true.
But he talked to the ocean, he talked to Shakespeare, he talked to Mozart. He's been trying to get like a composition out of Mozart, but Mozart keeps being like, oh, it's really hard to communicate to you because my concept of sound beyond the pale is different. And all of the composers around the table are like, those aren't notes. And he's like, I just can't speak of you anymore. So then he disappears. There's something bits in it that is like, he was like talking to these ghosts, probably Charles, his son, and his wife, Adele, who are, or, and a person called Auguste Vaquier, who is the brother of Leopoldine's husband.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that there's a lot of them just kind of like, asking questions and getting answers that are very like within their realm of knowledge and expertise. But all of them, I think most of them like were pretty much certain that they were talking to ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
There's bits in it that I'm like, oh, that was the inspiration behind Hugo writing Les Mis. There was a bit where one of the spirits came and was talking about how humans only care about animals if it's beautiful animals, and they don't care about if it's weeds or slugs or worms. And that the ghost was like, and this is a metaphor for how humans only care about beautiful humans and don't care about convicts and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, that is pretty much one for one, my favourite bit of Les Mis, the bit with the weeds and Jean Valjean being like, there's no bad plant, only bad cultivators. So yeah, it's kind of interesting reading all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if not a ghost, what person at that table was like, Hugo, I'm gonna influence your next text.
Yeah,
I need this story put out there.
In my head, I think it's most likely that it was Charles Hugo, because he was the one who was the medium. And so that's Charles's son. Sorry, Hugo's son.
Uh-huh.
And he was the one who, like, didn't have a job and got to Jersey and was just like, I'm going to take up photography and lie around because there's literally nothing I can do because you believe in Providence so hard that, well, Providence will give me a job or Providence will take it away from me or blah, blah, blah. He was very existentialist in that kind of way. So he was just lying around doing seances and...
Wow, love that for him.
Yeah, right? Like smoking, eating, blah, blah, blah. So I think it was probably Charles, but, you know.
Okay, so Charles was like, what if you, father, cared about poor people a bit more?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
This is Stevie, she, they pronouns. I've not read anything cool like that recently. What have I been up to? I'm at Nemo's. We're recording together. So as always, like...
We've got to warm up to not looking at each other.
We can spend all Christmas, New Year's, days and weeks together, nonstop, fine. The second we have to record in the same room, we're like...
Spooked cats, just like...
Do I look at you? Do I not look at you? What's better? Yeah, as Nemo introed us, the war within four walls, and we are warring with ourselves within four walls. That was the name of the chapter today. I realised you couldn't all see that.
Starting
strong.
Starting part five.
Yes, we have entered part five, Jean Valjean. And I'm going to try and get us to Jean Valjean chapter today.
Because he promises so much of us.
He really promises, and I was like, I'm not saying much Jean Valjean. Let me just read an extra one, just in case. We start off... Oh, did we say season five? New season! Yay!
Yay!
We're beginning with not the plot, because it's Victor Hugo.
Yeah.
And not with Jean Valjean.
Yeah.
He's like, at some point in this first chapter, he's like, surely you will allow me, Victor Hugo, to just, like, take you away for a moment. And you're like, I just can't ever stop you. There's these two barricades, the two most memorable barricades, in fact, that he wants to tell us about. They're not from this time period, but they're such beautiful barricades. And they just are such, they just say so much that he's got to do it.
Uh-huh.
So we are skipping forward in time to 1848. Two barricades, both symbols, in different guises. This was a, what does he call it? Fateful, an insurrection that is unfortunate to him because it is the people against the people.
Mm.
So this is post a revolution and the republic, and it's just must not be doing what the people want enough because the people are rebelling against that instead of the monarchy. So we are all eating each other kind of vibes.
Mm.
So the first barricade, which was Faubourg Saint-Antoine, was this huge, monstrous beast, basically. It's like 3 stories high, 700 feet wide, covers 3 streets.
Mm.
And its construction was like, this is like the chaos barricade.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone threw everything at it. It's just like a big, huge, chaotic pile. And because it's so huge, you can feel the agonizing suffering that must have been reached to make people to drive people to this.
Mm.
It's just huge. It's like, it had the deplorable aspect of all of hatred's edifices, ruin. You might say, who built this? You might just as well say, who destroyed this? It is improvisation of ferment. Like, literally everything and the kitchen sink is just, like, piled up here.
Mm.
And it's on the space where the Bastille used to be, and he's like, it's a very deserved spot for this. What is going on here? It's the mob. It's like the buzzing, violent buzzing of insects over this barricade. So there's this constant noise about it. It doesn't seem constructed by humans. It's just like vast and like he uses a lot of words to try and to put into words, just like how you can't even really describe the sheer mass of it.
Mm.
It made a weapon out of everything. Everything that civil war can hurl at society came out of here. It was frenzied. There's a huge red flag in the wind, of course, on it. The constant, like, shouting of people, sobbing of women, bursts of laughter from the famished. The spirit of revolution clouded this summit from which roared the voice of the people. It attacked in the name of the revolution. What did it attack? The revolution.
The leftist infighting.
Yeah, it's very there. So he's like, it's quite unfortunate that this had to happen because, like, he believes in the republic and the revolution so much. And then it's like, but it clearly didn't do what it needed to do because now the people are having to do this all over again. Senseless but heroic defiance. That's how he describes it. When it's getting shot at, this thing is just the mass of this thing. It just, like, eats the bullets up. There's no point trying to cannonball it.
Mm.
Like, shooting a cannonball into chaos. Like, what the fuck is that even going to do? It is a bristling boar of monstrous size. So this is barricade one is just, like, chaos, giant wild boar, sound, just whatever people can throw at this thing.
Mm.
And then we meet barricade number two.
Uh-huh. The girl behind barricade number two, please tell us about your favourite place to go on a date.
The Faubourg de Temple barricade.
Ooh.
In the complete opposite, this barricade is, like, terrifyingly well thought out and constructed in that it is. So if you imagine some tall houses, they have constructed this barricade up between, like, a street of houses so well that it looks like the road has just been, like, pulled up between them.
Mm.
So everything is level, linking up each house. It's built of cobblestones, plumb straight, aligned, precise, perpendicular, squared, level. Everything is so evenly spaced. Every window and door is closed. It creates a complete dead end.
Mm.
At the end of the street. And it's silent.
Mm.
Nothing can be seen, nothing can be heard. So, like, so symmetrical, something very scientific about it. You sense that the man in charge of this barricade was a surveyor or a spectre. And any time if a soldier sort of, like, came upon this thing and was like, what the fuck?
Mm.
if you try and get close, you would just hear a high-pitched whistling sound, and then that soldier's just dead.
Mm.
The men on the barricade had made themselves two small cannons out of cast iron piping, plugged at one end with fire clay, so that you don't need gunpowder to shoot this thing. So they're literally like, they've wasted nothing. They've wasted no space. This thing is like so precise and so well guarded by like, it was only 80 people, well, 80 men guarding this barricade. But whoever is in charge has it so regimented that anyone coming close just gets taken out. There's all these like bodies in the street in pools of blood. I, Victor Hugo, remember a white butterfly coming and going in the street. You felt targeted by someone you could not see, and you realized the whole length of the street was taking aim if you came anywhere near it. There was even a Colonel Montnard who admired this barricade and was just like, as he was saying, look how it's built. Not one cobblestone juts out above another. Porcelain, that is. And then gets shot and killed by it. And when like people were trying to be like, oh, they're cowards, because they weren't even showing themselves. Like, it's so well constructed, you cannot see where you're being shot at. In the end, defended by 80 men, attacked by 10,000. I'm like, where are these men coming from? This barricade held out for 3 days. And it took that many men to just like force their way into the houses to then reach the top of the barricade via the rooftops. All 80 remained, like no one fled, even though, you know, they'd just been like, oh, these cowards hiding. They all like went down with the ship except for the leader, Bartholomew, who was taken prisoner. Everyone else who was part of it died. He was like, and I'll say more about him later.
So we don't need to Wikipedia him.
So barricade one, in a, describe yourself. Thunderous tumult. Barricade two, silence. The difference between awesome and sinister. One seemed a moor, the other a mask. Like, it was actually really cool reading his descriptions of these two barricades, because you are like, it is quite sinister in very different ways. Like, he writes them very well. Behind one is a dragon, behind the other a sphinx. These two fortresses had been erected by two men. Man one, Cornet. Man two, Bartholomew. Each barricade was a reflection of the man who built it. Cornet, it really does feel like data number one. Cornet was a tall man, broad-shouldered, red face, crushing fist, a bold heart, staunch spirit, sincere and terrible gaze. The most cordial of men, and also the most formidable of fighters. War, strife, conflict, they put him in good humour. He had been a naval officer, and you could tell that he thrived on the ocean and had survived a storm. He took the barricade into battle. No, the hurricane. He took the hurricane into battle with him. So that's how we get the, like, this huge beast of a barricade that is like a force of nature from our naval sir. Barricade two, the one that could have been erected with like a ruler to make sure everything is precise. Thin, scrawny, pale, taciturn. Bartholomew was kind of tragic, a tragic gammon. So he'd gone to the prison hulks at 17, and he came out and built this barricade.
Wow.
Later, fatefully enough, in London, so they were both taken as political refugees, I guess, as the creators of these barricades. Bartholomew killed Cornet, so number two killed number one.
Wow.
In a duel. And then sometime later, in one of those mysterious intrigues where passion is involved, calamities in which French justice sees extenuating circumstances and English justice sees only death, Bartholomew was hanged. So, unrelated, but he was hanged. It is kind of weird that one builder killed the other.
Yeah. Well, Hugo picking his case studies, right?
Yeah.
Emmanuel Bartholomew. I was basically wondering if there was going to be any fan fiction between Bartholomew and Cornet.
We'd have to first make the anime.
Yeah, that's true. He came into contact with Karl Marx.
Wow. There it is, the last duel in England. What were they fighting over? Remarks about a former girlfriend.
Oh, of course, of course. It took place near Englefield Green. Englefield Green is... Yeah, Englefield Green is where I went to university.
Oh.
It's like, I was like, Englefield Green, that can't be the same one that I walked past every day on my route to school.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, Providence.
It all comes back to Mavis.
Yeah.
Was it a good place for a jewel, do you think?
It's quite beautiful, but I mean...
Okay, a good place to die.
Yeah, there's like a cemetery that's like kind of the big thing that's there.
Oh, you can be buried immediately.
Yeah, there's a spa. I wonder if what's his face? One of them was buried at Englefield Green. He is! Oh my god! He's buried there! I walk past him every day!
Oh, that is Providence.
Yeah. Bartholomew began working as an engineer for a soda water maker. Oh, wow.
Okay.
How is he the... Okay, we have to suddenly be very... I was thinking, like, that it is very, like, phrenological. This, like, idea that one of them was, like, big and brawny and you build the big and brawny place and the thin, straight one made the thin, straight barricade. And then I was, like, the next thing that was, like, pictures of his desk mask were included in several texts of phrenology. So it's very that.
Like, we do want to study them both, actually.
Yeah, literally. They are the butterflies being pinned to the...
Yeah. Well, we got to learn about two men and their spirit animal barricades.
Yeah.
We need to make a you quiz that's like, what does your barricade look like based on your soul?
My big man and my little thin guy. Yeah. It's very shippable.
Yeah. And that the scarier one is the tiny guy.
Yeah, yeah.
With the ruler.
Yeah.
Well, we learnt about these barricades because 16 years is a significant amount of time for education between riots.
Mm-hmm.
And those ones, which were built in June 1848, were a great deal wiser than June 1832.
Oh. Well, because you know who's leading the revolution in 1832? Marius, apparently.
Well, we'll have a lot to say on that this episode.
Uh-huh.
But it's those barricades got to be so huge and awesome in its like truest form of the word, like full of awe and terrifying, because they got to build upon the knowledge of these 1832s.
I see. So when in Les Mis 2012/the musical, when the song Turning, Turning happens and it's like, well, what's the fucking point? They all just died.
Mm.
It's like, well, because of this, which Hugo puts in before most of the kids die to be like, listen, you've got to stand and die so that more people will come and stand and die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can learn how to build. They'll see how you built your barricade and be like, I'll make it even bigger. So the boys' barricade was only a primitive version of those bigger ones to come, compared to those two colossal boys.
Mm.
But for its time, it was very formidable. This is the line that you may have heard me laughing at early into me reading. The insurgents under Enjolras' supervision, for Marius no longer paid attention to anything.
Wow, he's at the job for like 30 seconds.
Yep, showed up, did one cool thing, got the promotion, tapped out.
Yeah, sounds just about right.
But under Enjolras' supervision, they've made good use of the night.
Uh-huh.
The barricade is not only repaired, but enlarged.
Ooh.
They've stuck iron bars between the cobblestones that look like couch lances. They've added more debris. They've got their staircase back for to climb the barricade, so that will make things easier for them.
Mm.
Barricade put to rights, the bar room is cleared, we've sorted out the kitchen, swept up our gunpowder, torn more bandages by those, how are they described?
Oh.
Fine fingers.
Yeah, fine fingers. Broad men or something. Yeah,
our big strong boys who are so good at making bandages.
Mm.
They're back on it. Corpses have been removed, which they have heaped in one of the alleyways that they still control.
Mm.
And among the dead were four National Guardsmen from the city outskirts that Enjolras has had. Well, just as Enjolras had their uniforms put aside. They were like, stripped the corpses of...
Yeah. They are the characters in Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Who
get taken and disguised as.
Enjolras has recommended 2 hours sleep. And advice from Enjolras was a command. but only three or four of them actually listen.
Mm-hmm.
Fuli has been carving on the wall opposite the tavern, "Long live the masses."
Mm.
You could still read this message.
when you said he was carving, I was like, 3, 2, 1.
You could read this on the wall, even in 1848.
Wow.
The three women have taken advantage of this respite and the darkness to just fuck off. They've had enough of this.
Mm.
And actually, the insurgents are kind of feel better about that, mm. that the women have taken refuge in some neighboring house.
Mm.
Most of the wounded were still able and willing to fight, so we're actually not down many people right now.
Mm.
There's nothing left in the bar room but Mabeuf under his black pall and Javert tied to his pillar. And the composition of Mabeuf's body and Javert and the pillar he's tied against and the flickering shadow, because there's only one candle, kind of make it look like a big and distinct crucifix.
Oh, wow.
The symbolism.
Oh, wow.
The flag has been hung back up, of course.
Mm.
And Enjolras, who had that quality in a leader of always doing what he said he would do, had that flag is made out of the bullet-ridden, bloodstained coat of Mabeuf.
Mm.
So, also, he's like, symbols are important.
Mm.
We're all hungry because there's no food left. And this is quite normal to happen at barricades because you're barricaded.
Yeah.
So, because they can't eat, Enjolras is like, also no drinking.
Mm.
He banned wine, but rationed brandy, so brandy doesn't count as drinking. I'm all like, no alcohol on my barricade. Spirits don't count, right?
I guess with brandy, you only have like a snifter rather than like a whole glass, right? Like,
yeah. And I just as like reading that line, I was like, oh my god, Grantaire would not be happy to hear this. They find in the cellar 15 full bottles of wine.
Yeah.
And Combeferre's like, oh, it must... This is the old stock from when Père Hucheloup of Meat Stuffed Carp came. When he was alive and a grocer. And Bossuet's like, oh yeah, it must be really good. Lucky thing Grantaire's asleep.
We know Hugo so well.
Yeah. But I wonder if Enjolras like made that proclamation knowing Grantaire isn't here to kick up a fuss. Like, he's asleep. I can ban the alcohol. And there's like a bit of murmuring about it, but Enjolras is like, no, I've placed a veto on these bottles, so no one is going to touch them. They get put under Pemabuff's body, like under the table that his body is on. And that makes it even more like, no, this is sacred. We will not touch.
Yeah.
By then it's 2 a.m. and that's when they count themselves and there's still 37 of them. And I think we started with 40 or 45.
Mm.
So we've not lost too many.
Mm.
The sun is kind of beginning to come up. The interior of the barricade, that kind of looks like a little courtyard because of where they've built it and the way the street works. They're all kind of running around in that bit, looking like shadows, like dark figures moving about. But you can hear, like, with the sun coming up, like, the birds are beginning to tweet and the sky is the blue and all of these nice things. I think there was a cat on a ledge at some point. And the morning breeze is ruffling the grey hair on the dead man's head of the body hung that fell out the window earlier from getting shot.
Mm.
They're like, okay, Hugo. Yeah, because the sun's coming out, they got to put their single candle out, which Kufrak is happy about because he's like, the flickering of that was upsetting me. Too creepy. I'm glad we still get some boys characterization now.
Yeah,
the flickering of that torch was like, it was as if it was afraid.
Mm.
Cast poor light because of its unsteadiness. Oh, and here is the cat. Cat prowling around, and Jolie's like, my last chance to wax philosophical. What is cat? It is a correction. God made a mouse and was like, what the fuck have I done that for? I'll fix this. I'll make a cat to take care of the mice. So, mouse plus cat are the revised and corrected proofs of creation. And then we've got Combeferre, who was surrounded by students and artisans, and he's talking about the dead, Jean Prouvaire, Bahorel, Mabeuf, and about Enjolras' stern sorrow. He's like, our hearts are so tremulous and human life is such a mystery that in the case of murder, even for public good, of murder, even in the cause for freedom, if such a thing exists. Remorse for having killed a man exceeds the joy of having served the human race. So he's like, even though Enjolras had to do it, he must be feeling some kind of way.
That's pretty, yeah, Hugo having thoughts that these kids aren't doing it for violence, mean alone. And that they're not doing it because they just want vengeance or, yeah, just killing for killing's sake, but that they take every life as meaningful within their revolution.
Yeah, that even if they feel like they have to do it, they're gonna be fucked up afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm assuming he's saying that where Enjolras can't hear him.
Yeah. I mean, he's right, right? Like, when Enjolras did it before, he was like, I don't take pleasure out of this.
Yeah, and I have judged this man, and I will surely be judged for having done this to him as well.
Yeah.
I enjoy their chats, and you are also like, oh my god, these are such, they're just students.
Yeah.
Because they are on, like, we could die any moment, let me just, like, pontificate a bit longer. Combefer's thinking about Caesar as well. He was justly brought down. Cicero was harshly critical of Caesar, and he was right to be. I really in-depth studied Cicero at college. So he's like, he did so much, but what I mostly remember is that he's like, so jokes. He was like one of those OG lawyers where he's like, it's all about delivering the panache, and as long as I make an argument really good, it doesn't... I'm sure he likes to pretend like, oh, it matters what is really truth and who did right or wrong. But he was like OG boy that was like, if I fucking sell you on this and I smear the character of the other guy enough, I will surely win.
That's great.
So he's like OG lawyer shark.
He's like every one of those, like, Better Call Saul, like...
Yeah, he is that guy.
Billboard kind of people.
Yeah, and like, this doesn't really relate to Les Mis, but Cicero is being spoken about, so it is. He was like obsessed with Pompey, who was also on the same like high up council as Caesar, and who did not give a fuck about Cicero and was just like, cringe. And Caesar was like, I will fully, like, you're so interesting, like, let's chat. Yeah. And Cicero hated Caesar so much. They were like, you fucking could have backed the other guy. But, like, there was just some funny stuff going on with Cicero. So whenever he comes up, I'm like,
It's also providence that this episode will come out 2 days after the Ides of March.
Well, yeah, that comes up here. Because he also lifts off some other people who were critical of other people. So, Zoleus insults Homer, Maevius insults Virgil, Phreron insults Voltaire.
How dare he, of all of the slights.
It is an old law of envy and hatred that is being observed. Genius attracts insult. Great men are always more or less subject to carping. But actually, I know I just said that, but it's different when Cicero did it, because he was right too. So, like, usually great men, myself perhaps even included in that, me, Victor Hugo, we just attract people who want to be detractors.
Yeah.
And that's always wrong, except for this one time.
Yeah.
Because... Cicero meets out justice by the intellect, where Brutus uses justice by the sword. For my own part, I condemn the latter form of justice, the blade, but antiquity allowed it. So he's like, I like how Cicero did it, which was being a little bitch on Maine versus violence. And because Caesar has, like, you know, he did the Rubicon and all of these things he was doing, sort of acting like he was... king and tyrant, who's a great man. Too bad. He was stabbed by the senators. His 23 wounds affect me less than the spitting in Jesus Christ's face. So, R.I.P. Caesar.
Yeah.
So this will be kind of timely.
Yeah, very timely.
And meanwhile, that was Combeferre, then it was Hugo. That was all Combeferre. Okay, that was all Combeferre. Meanwhile, Busways, on top of a pile of paving stones with a rifle, asking, who will grant that I may deliver Homer's verse like a Greek of Lorium? So they're all just like, student boys who are really into the classics.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, they're all doing law.
Yes. Oh, no wonder they're like, Cicero could never be justly criticized.
Yeah. And all of their education would have been like all of this Greco-politic bullshit.
Yeah, that's true. So it all makes sense. Yeah. And I'm sure Hugo was too.
Yeah.
Enjolras has meanwhile undertaken some reconnaissance.
Oh.
He slipped away and was like, so funny if he doesn't come back.
Yeah.
At this point, all the insurgents are full of hope. They're smiling. They're not doubtful of their success at all. They're like, help is going to come and we're just going to fucking smash it, lads.
Yeah.
They hear the tolling of a church bell. And to them, that is proof that the other barricades are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because that church must be within the grounds of the main barricade going on at Jeanne's. So the fact this bell is going off, they're like, excellent news. Our people still have control of that. Mm. And so it's still tolling. So like, it's all good. Then Enjolras comes back. Oh. And he's listening to all this joy for a moment, one hand over his mouth, like, looking fresh and rosy in the pale dawn light. He's like, so the whole Paris army's out. And a third of that army is going to come onto this barricade. So that'll be in an hour's time, probably.
Yeah.
Also, the people who were, you know, quite fervent yesterday, this morning, they're not stirring. Mm. So help isn't going to come, and there's nothing to hope for.
Yay!
He's like, when he has his terrifying, like, moments, he's a good leader in that you're like, oh my god, like, awe-inspiring. Mm. But he's, like, not good at delivering a message.
I mean, he was very concise.
He's good at that.
He didn't lead anyone on.
Okay, that's true. He does not beat around the bush.
Yeah.
So he's like, so, yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah. In one of these seances, Hugo was talking about Napoleon, the OG Napoleon, and was talking about, like, with one of the ghosts being, like, and some of his friends being, like, I think that Napoleon was a good leader in defeat. And everyone was like, but he literally was the worst leader in defeat. And Hugo was like, no, what I mean was that he was a good leader in defeat because he went with them, or he was very frank with them, or something. He, like, kind of explained it, but I'm getting the vibe of that's what that Hugo is trying to do with Enjolras. The, like, in defeat, he is a good leader because he is practical about it. And
No, like, false hope.
Or... Yeah. He isn't trying to be like, come on, lads.
Yeah.
And isn't trying to, like, he also isn't trying to be aggressive, like, isn't trying to be like, okay, well, now's the time that we bring out our secret super guns kind of thing. It's just like, okay, I understand that we're defeated and I can control that quite well. And from now, here's our choices kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Okay, Enjolras, you gave it in a way, but we'll allow it.
Mm.
Because it does fall silent. There was a moment of unutterable quiet in which death might have been heard passing over. Like, everyone's like, And then a voice, who knows whose, in the crowd, from its obscurest depths, cries out to Enjolras, so be it! Let's raise the barricade to the height of 20 feet, and let's just let our dead bodies protest.
Mm.
The people may abandon the Republicans, but the Republicans do not abandon the people.
Mm.
And everyone's like, yeah! Like, everyone was so full of gloom and anxiety for a moment there, following what Enjolras said. Yeah. But now they're like, yeah, roused.
Yeah.
So he's good at being like, here's what it is, we're fucking dead.
Yeah.
But he's not a, like, rally everyone's vibes back. So, yeah, no, everyone is now, like, 100% like, okay, fuck it, we're just gonna fucking die for this, and that's what we're here to do. And at the very same time, another of the barricades that was still up, they were literally having, like, the same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was heard and written down, recorded in history, that some of the, they were, like, at this other barricade, St. Mary. They're like, what does it matter whether anyone comes to our aid or not? Let every last one of us be killed here.
Mm.
These two barricades, though physically separated, were communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, that nameless advocate of Hugo's like, whenever something like this happens, there'll be some man in the crowd and you'll never know who he was. He was just here almost as if speaking for God to be like, lads, we can do this, and you'll never know who he was.
Yeah.
But he's always at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, long live death, we'll all stay here. And Angelus was like, why all? And they're all like, all. He was like, okay, the position is good. The barricade is solid. 30 men is enough. Why sacrifice 40?
Mm.
And everyone's like, no one wants to be the one to leave. Like, no one wants that bad luck.
Yeah.
And Angelus, principle incarnate, is like, the Republic is not rich enough in men to be needlessly extravagant with them.
Mm.
Vainglory is wasteful.
Mm.
So, if you have a duty to leave, you should go.
Yeah.
So I guess, this is still him being very, like, practical, like, not trying to rouse everyone's spirits. Yeah. I guess it's like, your spirits have been roused too much, perhaps.
Yeah. The kind of, like, okay, profit loss kind of thing. Mm. More in line with the
ruler guy.
Oh my god, Bartholomew. Mm. Being like, okay, we need enough to make an impact to die, but not everyone, so that people can live on and propagate our thoughts and feelings to the next generation.
Let's do this efficiently.
Yeah.
So he's like, let those who are afraid of being no more than 30 step forward. Everyone's like, leaving is easier said than done. The barricade is surrounded, and he's like, no, like, as has been described, the barricade's in one place, mini barricade on another side. Mm. They leave their, like, exit routes, which are also there for, like, the passing of messages and whatever. So, like, there is a way out. And also, we've got those four uniforms from earlier. So, four people don't have to die here.
Yeah.
And he's like, so who's it gonna be? And no one wants to be that girl. So, Combifer, who's like, he is like, why Marius? Like, Combifer has been secondary leader this entire time.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what's an issue here? Women. Consider, like, are there women, yes or no? Are there children, yes or no? Are there mothers, like, worrying about where you are? I don't... This is also, like, he's about to make a really good point, but this still made me laugh, where I'm like, you fucking gay boy. Where he's like, I don't want to sense around me the specters of women wringing their hands. You know, where it's like, in a good way, but also it was just the, like, I don't want to sense the specters of women on my barricade.
This is for boys only. No girl cooties allowed.
But his actual point is that, like, us staying here, this is suicide. Like, we know that's what this is, but we're doing it to make this point.
Yeah.
And he's like, and that's sublime. Mm. But suicide has a narrow compass that should not be broadened.
Mm.
And as soon as it affects your family, suicide is murder.
Yeah.
So he's like, if you've got, I saw earlier an old woman in the window over there, like, with her candle looking worried as if she was waiting up for someone. If that's your mom, go the fuck home to her.
Yeah.
When it's your work that's supporting your family, you've no right to sacrifice yourself.
Yeah.
Desertion of your family, that is. And those who have daughters and those who have sisters. What are you thinking of? If you let yourself die and you can no longer support them, that basically what's going to happen to them? They're going to have to become sex workers, because, like, there's no options for them.
Yeah.
The market of human flesh. He's like, you know, even the women, the sex workers you see out and about today, they were pure women too, so it's still very of the time, you get where he's trying to come from.
Yeah.
And he's like, and you got yourselves killed. You're not there anymore to look after them.
Yeah.
You wanted to deliver the people from royalty, and you hand your young girls over to the police. Friends, beware. This does feel like the Hugo speaking through, because he's like, because I guess Hugo cared about education?
Yeah.
Also for women?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that does come across. Because he's like, we don't educate women the way we educate men, and we prevent them from reading, and we prevent them from thinking, and we prevent them from being involved in politics.
Mm.
Will you prevent them from going to the morgue this evening to identify your bodies? I know it takes courage to go. It's really hard. Like, it's almost easier, you know, with this energy we've all got to be like, yeah, let's all stay. I'm staying. Like, fuck it, I'm ready.
Yeah.
But there's a tomorrow, and your family especially if you've got women and children relying on you. They're going to be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
What happens to the child that is rosy-cheeked now? It'll be starved. And as a doctor myself, I once came across this starving child who was in a state and had, like, died of starvation and never spoke a word. That could be your child. He's really good at this job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's, like, the purser, right? Like, the second-in-command on the ship, who's, like, in charge of actually dealing with the people in the ship and, like, going between management or, like, the captain and the crew and being like, okay, as one of you, here's the thing. Whereas the person who's in charge has to be like, okay, profit loss adjustment.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's so true. Like, they even... when it was, like, all the men running around in their little courtyard bit, because of the shape of everything, they did get likened to, like, it's like a ship. And the crew running around. But, so Enjolras was like, here's why we don't stop for land.
Yeah.
And then Comfort has to be like, here's why it's okay that we're not stopping for land and it will be okay.
Yeah. Well, that is why they were, like, referred to as your least favourite thing, the trifecta, before, like... Andras, Confer, and Kufrak, because Andras is the one who's like, anyway, these are the ideals and we're dying for them, and Confer's the one who's like, okay, these are the ideas and here's why we're dying for them, but as your friend and colleague, and Kufrak's like, okay, now that was a downer, but here's the party anthem to see us out.
It is all hands on deck. I mean, yeah. Nenny's out here, Combefair is like, was that not enough? Did I not fucking tug at your heartstrings? I got some statistics for you.
Oh my god, yeah.
What's the mortality rate among abandoned children? 55%. I repeat, what is an issue here is women. What is an issue is mothers, young girls, little kiddies. We all know we're all very courageous men here. Like, we know that. We know that you feel you've been chosen to die usefully and magnificently. Yeah. Good for you. But you're not alone in this world.
Yeah.
You must not be selfish.
Yeah. This ego management.
Yeah. And then he goes like, Combefair's like out here saying all this. Like, go home to your mothers. But he's thinking of everyone else's mother so much that, like, he's not an orphan.
Yeah.
He forgets to think, like, I got a mom at home.
Yeah.
He was going to get himself killed. He was, as he had put it, selfish. Meanwhile, Marius plunged deeper and deeper. Deeper and deeper into that visionary stupor. A physiologist might have studied him. The growing symptoms of despair, which has its ecstasies. He's reached that stage. He's still, like, fully, this is a man dissociating. It's as if he's watching everything from the outside. He's, like, kind of hearing what's going on around him and, like, kind of not at all. Right. The sense of the overall picture, but he couldn't see any details. However, he was moved by what Combefair has said.
Uh-huh. And he thinks of Cosette.
He actually doesn't.
Oh.
He's only thinking of, I'm going to die here, but I can save someone else. So he speaks up and is like, Enjolras and Combefair are right. No unnecessary sacrifice. I agree with them. What Combefair has said matters. If you've got families, mothers, sisters, wives, children, step forward. Still everyone's like, no. Married men and family breadwinners, step forward. He had great authority. Enjolras was certainly the leader of the barricade, but Marius was its savior. You just gotta do one big thing. I command you, cried Enjolras. I entreat you, said Marius. And then finally, so stirred by Combefair's speech and settled by Enjolras's command, moved by Marius's entreaty, finally men begin to denounce each other. Where someone will be like, oh, it's true, you're a father, you've got family, you should really go home. Like, well, yeah, but, like, you also have two sisters to provide for. So now everyone's fighting over still not wanting to be the one to leave.
Yeah.
And it's only, like, a quarter of an hour until it's going to be too late. So Enjolras is like, right, it's the Republic. You yourselves must nominate those who are to leave. So they obey, and five are unanimously selected and came forward. And they're like, oh, shit, five. We've only got four uniforms. And then they fight again, being like, no, I should be the one who has to stay. Like, I know it's that, like, as Victor Hugo has talked about himself as well, they're like, that he was one of those young men whose dad went to war, and you're like, oh, I'm a young man and I have nothing to get glory from. So you, like, want that moment of, like, oh, I'm going to die in a really meaningful way.
Yeah.
And it's not this. Like, it's that. But you can't help be, like, the same way that my wife has an office job and it's mostly all the, like, men with families are like, please, let's all go to the pub after work for an hour or two. I can go back home later. But you're like, do you want to fucking go back to your family?
Oh my god.
But I can't help but feel like a tiny bit of the like, no, don't make me go home. I'd rather die for glory.
I want my name to be part of the history books. Mm.
Don't make me go home to my wife and screaming children. But, well, not but, they are fighting to be like, no, no, but, like, you've lost both mother and father. What's to become of your little brothers? Like, surely you have to go home. The great revolutionary barricades were venues for heroism. Like, I'm sure, like, that is actually what it is. They're like, we're so filled with divine purpose that I don't want to be the one to let it go.
Yeah. And you psyched yourself up to die at this
point. They sure have.
And, like, you know, I think most of them as well would probably acknowledge that, like, going home would feel like a defeat in a way that staying and dying doesn't feel like a defeat as well.
Having to actually live with it.
Yeah.
Knowing all your bros are gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marius no longer believes himself capable of any feeling.
Okay.
Oh, because, so they're like, Marius, you pick who has to stay and die. And that's why he's like, but I already feel like I can't feel anything. And he's looking at these five, all of them smiling at him as if to be like, me, choose me to stay and die. Stupidly, Marius counted them. There were still five. Looks down at the few more uniforms. And just as he's all spinning out, a fifth uniform dropped on top of the other four. As if from heaven, the fifth man was saved. He looked up and recognized Monsieur Fauchelevent. Jean Valjean has just arrived inside the barricade. Perhaps because he made inquiries. Perhaps just by instinct. He'd known what roads to take to get himself to the barricade. In his National Guardsman uniform, he's passed unhindered. Even past that, the lookouts that have been set up. Because there's no cause for alarm when there's a lone National Guardsman, and you're like, how did any of these ever work?
Yeah, well, Gavroche isn't here to be like...
like, maybe last time we just let a guy in, it was Javert. But yeah, so he got through here fine. And he'd entered the group, and no one had noticed him, because they're all staring at these five men and the four uniforms. But he'd seen and heard everything. Silently took off his coat and threw it on the pile with the rest. Who is this man? Asked Bossuet. He's a man who saves others, said Combeferre. I know him, Marius says in a somber voice. So I guess we're like, I know him. And that was enough to satisfy everyone, because they're like, oh, well, Marius, savior of the barricade, knows him. Enjolras turns to Jean Valjean and is like, citizen, welcome. You know we're going to die. Without replying, Jean Valjean helped the insurgent he was saving to put on his uniform. Ah, Jean Valjean's here!
Yay!
I really did fly us through those.
Yeah.
I didn't miss any. No, I was just really, instead of quoting them tense, I was like, get to Jean Valjean!
The entire time I was like, he's coming.
Saving a man. Maybe here to kill Marius. We won't know until it doesn't happen.
Yeah. That would be a great plot twist if I suddenly was in an alternate reality where Jean Valjean just kills Marius in the next chapter.
It was like, well, didn't Enjolras earlier say that I, who judged a man, will myself be judged? And Marius, you chose who was to die and stay, so I must judge you. For unrelated to personal reasons. I when it was the four uniforms, it took longer than it maybe should have for me to be like, oh, you know, who's in a fucking uniform? But the second the fifth one went down, I was like, ah! He knows how to make an entrance.
Yeah, he does. It's such a, like, not contrived thing, but that, like, oh, five men got unanimously voted forward, and it's like, man, there couldn't be five uniforms.
Yeah. And also, they all knew there was only four uniforms before they unanimously decided, so why didn't you unanimously just decide four?
Yeah. But it is an entrance.
Yeah.
And it also, he listened to everything and was thinking about Cosette, assumedly, when he still decided to die.
Yeah, Marius and Cosette both being like, oh, I do have someone at home, but it couldn't be me.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has a mother at home who has not lost their mother, and assuming that it's not just Combeferre with a mom.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think, the, like, priority, though, on, like...
Yeah, if you have a kid or young, young sisters or people relying on you. Because there was that scene in the 2012 based on the play.
Yeah.
But I know that things can't take as long. It's a really long thing to condense into a 2 hour or 2.5 hour performance.
Mm.
But, like, really getting Combeferre's, like, instead of just, like, if you've got children at home, you should go home. Like, really getting into it, you're like, oh, yeah, you're not thinking, especially in this time period, like, oh, if you die, you have fucked your family.
Yeah.
So, like, you need to really believe in this and really believe it's the right thing to do.
Mm.
In the long term, and that the good for everyone it will hopefully do, and you don't even know if it will, does that outweigh your three starving children?
Yeah. And did Jean Valjean think before he took that loaf of bread and condemned his little nieces and nephews?
But they were starving!
They were starving, yeah. It's like that thing, though, right? That Valjean most definitely during this, obviously thinking about Cosette, but then thinking about, like, he's giving this uniform so that one man doesn't have to have the same outcome as he did.
Yeah. It's a good chapter! Enjoyed learning about the other barricades and all that, but, like, whenever it's like, let Combeferre speak, you're like, fuck! Because he was the one who was like, here's why you're stupid, Marius.
Yeah.
And then also, he fucking got him.
Yeah.
Got him on this one. Maybe he's best boy.
Hugo sure is making you like him.
I know. So I would like to move Combeferre up my death list. Any second now.
Just sniper shot right on the first line of the next page.
Yeah. Well, the next one is the outlook from the top of the barricade. So I'm like, oh no, someone's on top of the barricade.
That's not good. That's where people die.
That's where you're a sitting duck.
I have to say, I didn't remember the, like, two guys with their different barricades and, like, Hugo's thoughts on them. But it does set it up into the next chapter pretty well in the kind of, like, how different people lead their barricades.
Yeah.
And it made you think about how Andras lead... Well, you probably would have thought about it as well, but, like, that kind of guided thing of being like, and this is how Andras leads it, and I guess the reader is kind of, like, asked to think, like, how is the leadership model in this, and what could they have done differently, and did they try and save lives? Yes, they did. They tried to save these five people and stuff like that, so... This guided well.
Yeah. And it didn't take 20 pages. Because I think that's what, sort of, with some of the digressions, Waterloo, where I know the argument is like, oh, but this is important because it leads into this.
Yeah.
And I know a lot more happens at Waterloo, but I'm like, you know what? That was like one chapter, only a couple pages.
Yeah.
And it did what it needed to do. Gave us something interesting to think about. But then, led us right on to the next one. And I wasn't, like, so lost in all the details that you're like, why is this happening? Like, there was more details, but it was like, he just, like, did it succinctly.
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, that was some cool context. And also to be like, the next barricades were so rad because this barricade walked, so those barricades could run, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Instead of, I have personally been in Waterloo for 6 months of my life, trudging. And I know there'll be more digressions to come. I know he loves to give context, but if it could be more like this one, he could have just polished the gem a little bit more, maybe. I'm not his editor, though.
Who could say?
Who could say?
Yeah. I'm sure I made the reference at the time, but in the Iliad, it is that thing of like, anyway, here's chapter two. I'm going to list every boat that was here.
Yeah. I get it. I don't have to like it.
Yeah.
But I liked what that added. I liked those two barricades. It's very visual.
Mm.
So then this barricade was like started chaotic a little bit because we're throwing it together. But they built it back up and put all their spikes in there. So you're like, ooh, kind of like an amalgamation of those two. This was just like a baby barricade.
Mm.
And the other two that came from this one was like, I'm going to take the throw it all and see what happens. And I'm going to take how regimented and like cold and unpersonal we need to be about this.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. It's kind of like one is like a Grantaire barricade and one is an Ordre barricade.
It is. When are we making the U quiz? Yeah, liked it.
Good job, liked Hugo.
It. Yeah, and also enjoyed the Angelus is in charge because Marius doesn't care about anything line.
Well, at least he entreated them and he had the choice. I do like that Confer and Andras were like, anyway, you get to choose who dies.
Yeah, that's true. Well, was it them or... Nah, it was the rest of the people shouting to Marius, you say.
Okay.
It would have been funnier, though, if it was actually just Anjolas and Combefer cupping a hand around the mouth to throw their voices to be like, Marius, you choose. Yeah. Who said that? Yeah. You're right. He is in charge.
Every bad decision that they don't want to have to make, they're like, this is that shadow cabinet kind of thing. It's just like, oh, me? No, I'm not in charge. Marius is in charge. Anyway, go fall on your sword for us.
Well, at least, well, actually, he didn't even have to wield that power. But he wielded his power to be like, yeah, someone should go home.
Yeah.
We can't take that from him.
Yeah.
And you know we'd try if we could.
Well, a great start to part five.
No one died?
No one died.
No one died?
Yeah. One more week to edge you closer.
Any moment. I'll close it. My eyes are trying to flick around the next chapter. I don't want to accidentally spoil a death myself. Live on air.
Well, this has been Brandon Barricades, a Lamest podcast produced by me, Nemo Martin, and Julian the App. It's a Captain's Collections podcast. If you have any comments, questions, or quibbles, then you can send your fanfiction of Bartolome and Corneille to us at lamestpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at lamestpodcast or on Tumblr at Brandon Barricades. You could also send us your fanfiction in a review on iTunes or on Spotify, wherever you want to review this podcast. You could also download the theme song by Jade, who you can find on jadewasabi.bandcamp.com or jadewasabi.com. And when you download it, send a note to her, which is also your fanfiction of Corneille and Bartolome. And you can donate to us on our Ko-fi or on our Patreon, which would fund our Bartolome and Corneille film that we're going to make, clearly, after this. I think that's everything, so thank you for listening.
Thanks. I feel like if it was a cartoon, you'd be like, this is too much, clearly symbolizing each barricade as the same as the man. But you're like, it is history.
Yeah.
God did that.
So actually, physiognomy is real. Wow, I can't believe Hugo made us believe.